Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Not the Royal Wedding, a Republican antidote to all the royal guff. This episode is from the cartoon studio of Martin Rosen, the celebrated cartoonist. You'll have probably seen him in The Guardian. You'll have certainly, I hope, seen him doing my cartoon on a Monday in the Mirror.
My cartoon.
Your cartoon. Okay, your cartoon.
As I always give you the idea for the jokes in the column, I think it's a bit much.
Yeah, credit where it isn't due, exactly. I've always thought. But this is going to be a first, really, on a podcast, an audio podcast, because you're going to draw a cartoon. We will put it on the website, Martin, won't we?
Yeah.
So everyone, we can see it at the end. Now, you are a Republican. Why are you a Republican? What's the fundamental reason you are?
Well, because I think I'm pushing 60, and a few years ago I finally realised I was grown up. And so I'm not all that impressed by being shown a picture of some rich person and suddenly feeling all gooey inside and just grateful for the fact that a rich press baron has allowed me to see a photograph of somebody I previously never heard of. I just find it ludicrous that, I know previous contributors to this podcast have received the usual flood of Touretic hate mail because they've said something slightly disobliging about these rich people of whom we've previously never heard of. Why do they get so het up about it? I genuinely don't get it. I mean, I have nothing against Harry and Meghan. They seem to be very nice young people doing whatever they do. They make no difference to my life. But I genuinely don't understand why I should care one way or the other. And in a way, being presented with this, every time they do this, the beautiful guilt chips off a bit because, we're of an age, Kevin. We all remember having the day off at Princess Anne's wedding to Mark Phillips, foggy to his friends because he was thick and wet. And of course, that ended well, didn't it? And then we had the famous royal wedding of Charles and Diana, where I went to, I remember that very well because I was the only person on a train travelling to London to go to my sister's anti-royal wedding barbecue, which was quite fun. And I remember the night before, it was the International Year of the Disabled. There was a riot in Liverpool. The Liverpool Constabulary celebrated the International Year of the Disabled and the royal wedding during a riot by driving a police car at speed down a back alley and hitting somebody in a wheelchair during a riot. We forget about that bit.
Yeah.
We also forget about the pub in St. Ives that had all these fairy lights attached outside it to celebrate the royal wedding, and there was a bit of a fuse gone, and the thatch burnt down. That's something else that the royal wedding's responsible for.
Yeah, they're guilty of a lot.
They're guilty of a lot. And then I remember Prince Andrew's wedding. Yeah, that went well.
Oh yeah, brilliantly.
And it's always it always just sort of chips away, and every time you're meant to think of it as a fairy tale wedding. Well, fairy tales are about horses turning back into rats and mice, and golden. golden carriages turning back into pumpkins and all that kind of thing. And the last one, which was William and what's the name?
Kate Middleton.
Kate Middleton, thank you. Shows how much I pay attention to the news. I thought, actually, that the spell has completely broken because they obviously love each other.
Oh, no.
And therefore, it's not right because, they celebrate these royal weddings by having what most people don't have. Most people have a karaoke, possibly karaoke at a disco, get the in-laws around, they all get drunk in a marquee somewhere in a country house hotel. What they don't have is heavily armed men marching through civilian areas, which is what the royals always have. And part of it is the magnificent hypocrisy, which is the mortar of the British state. People forget that the British state we live under is the successor state to the Norman conquest state.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
This is an invasion state. And this is just the latest avatar of it, if you like. that the monarchy slowly had its powers chipped away, except its powers of patronage and its powers to accumulate more and more wealth to itself. And we're still meant to be grateful to them.
Yeah, do you see it as performing a political role in a sense of inequality? Tick, it's fine.
Well, my old dad, who was a senior academic, and he was a sort of bit of an anarchist, I suppose, in many ways. But I remember him saying to me when I was about 16 or 17 that the monarchy was the cock crowing on top of the dung heap. That actually everything else comes down from the monarchy. It's not about the individuals. It's about the fact that there is this crumbling edifice, which is the British state and the British establishment. You know, if you left it out in the garden overnight, it would probably fall to pieces. And all this patronage which pours down, you know, people pathetically grateful to get a British Empire medal. No. So I've never quite understood why you should take awards from the state. I know people who've taken them, and it hasn't made them better, to be honest.
No, I mean, I can see with charity workers, I mean, I'd stop and, stop the system and restart it, but I can see charity workers, people who've done a commitment to the community, but I think it's ruined by political gongs, party donors.
I have to tell a very unfortunate story here. A few years ago, I was rung up by BBC Radio London. It's about 15 years ago, back in the day when I used to be on a list they had, guaranteed to fill dead air. And they said, we're having a debate between Christmas and New Year about the honours list. What do you think about the honours list? I said, well, it's all a lot of nonsense. It's a lot of patronage coming from the top. I mean, you should just have one thing for everybody if you need to do it at all. I said, yeah, great. We'll get back to you. And I completely forgot about it. And on a sort of 28th of December, we'd been to a party the night before. Phone goes at 10 to 8 in the morning.
Bing, bing.
I had a hangover. I said, hello. I said, hello, Martin, BBC Radio London. You're on in 10. I thought, oh, my God. Ah. So I came up to this room here, where we are at the moment. My wife got the kids into bed with her, retuned to BBC Radio London. And I was having a debate with some monarchist who was saying, you know, but it's marvellous, all these wonderful things. You're the Dame Commander of the British Empire. You know, which doesn't exist anymore, and all this kind of thing. And I say, yeah, it's all just a lot of nonsense. You're sitting your ass for 50 years at the Department of Pen Pushing and Paper Clips, and then you become a knight commander of something which doesn't even exist. And then the presenter said, well, don't you think there should be some way of marking the impact you have on your community?
Oh, dear.
At which point there was one of those terrible brain farts where you realise your mouth is moving, but it's disconnected from your conscious brain. Because I heard myself saying, in which case they should give Harold Shipman an MBE.
Ooh. Ooh, yeah, I could see why that may be a little controversial. Yes,
and there was a terrible
140, 150 patients he killed.
Yes, he made an impact on his community.
No, he did. He certainly did.
And there was a terrible pause, at which point I said, "Well, I don't think the listeners to BBC Radio London would agree with that," and they never called me again.
So really, well done. Well done. You've freed yourself of the feudal shackles of BBC
Radio London.
But we've got a blank piece of paper here where you describe.
I've got a pencil here, and I'm just beginning to draw Meghan Markle, which is a first for me. I've never drawn Meghan Markle before. She's a very attractive young woman, and good luck to her. I'm glad to see that she has now become a full communicant of the Church of England, because, of course, we live in a multicultural society, which I approve of massively. I think it's a very good thing. We need some diversity. And yet, of course, if you are a member of the royal family, you cannot be a Roman Catholic. This sort of creaking edifice of the British establishment, that there are all these things that they can't do. They can't vote, I don't think. Can they vote?
They can't in parliamentary elections. There might be in local elections, but I'm not sure the Queen pops out up in Sandringham or Windsor or Buckingham Palace, or it'll be Westminster or any of many other places. But there we are. But no, they are unusual in that sense, and the fact the monarch is the head of the Church of England, defender of the faith.
Yeah, I think we're
in modern Britain it jars.
Well, we are one of I think sort of four countries on earth that has a state religion. There are very few others that have it. Well, we have no written constitution, but it's there. It is embedded in the state, and you know, a tiny group of people go to Anglican services regularly on a Sunday. Of course, they will argue furiously that everybody should. But it's all moved on, and you just think, why do we... in a way, we probably miss it for a bit, because suddenly there would be this void where previously there was all this tinsel and bunting.
Yeah.
I think it's not something we would miss for that long. People say, well, what would you replace it with? Would you have a president? Well, no. You see, but what people don't get is that for the last 300 and something years since the Glorious Revolution of 1688, we've actually been a hereditary republic. And we have a head of state, a president, who is a hereditary president. Whereas in America, they have an elected monarch. So the head of state is completely irrelevant, apart from having to do certain things and open some shops and appear on the stamps. And therefore, we invest an enormous amount of importance in them because it's a wonderful distraction from everything else. And there's and this sort of goes back 300 years. So looking back at the 18th century, a century of which I'm extremely fond, because they understood the importance of satire at the time. The great rebellious British politician and satirist and journalist John Wilkes, who wrote an attack on the King's speech in Parliament and Bute's government in about 1761. And they tried to get him on seditious libel, on treason. A cabinet minister challenged him to a duel in order to murder him, because they said, in attacking the King's speech, he was attacking the King. Of course, everybody knew the King hadn't written the King's speech.
Of course not, yeah.
But this idea, you can get away with all these things because it's our sovereign lady, the Queen, is doing it. You're doing all these things in the name of the Queen. And, oh, how can you be horrible to the lovely Queen? Because there she is, looking all lovely. Yeah. And we all love them because we have all these photographs given to us by all these press barons. Say, look at that, you should be so grateful. You can see the Duchess of Cambridge now doing her shopping, or whatever it is she does.
I mean, you can see Meghan Markle's head here on your...
Yeah, we can see Meghan Markle's head.
Yeah, you've done her quite nicely for you.
Well,
are pretty vicious.
As I say, I have nothing personally against Meghan Markle. I'm not entirely sure who she is. I mean, what does she do previously?
She's an American actor in Canada in a legal series called Suits.
Okay.
I've never watched it. I suppose I should, really.
So she's an actress.
Yep.
What qualities does she have that appeal to Prince, what's his name, Harry?
Well, I mean, it's a family podcast, we couldn't possibly go into issues like that, Martin. I hope they're very happy. I'm sure you hope they're very happy.
It's just the way they're
foisted upon us.
I have nothing against them personally. I think I wish them well. I don't see why they should be knocking the snooker off the telly for us to watch them getting married. I mean, it's not happening to anybody else. I'm sure there are going to be tens of thousands of people who are getting married who are not getting full press coverage. But, of course, a lot of it is down to our profession, newspapers.
No.
The sort of the fawning, drooling imbecility of newspaper editors who think, well, what's going on? Oh, let's run a picture of a royal baby. Let's run all this kind of stuff.
Yeah,
I've got nothing against royal babies. I think royal babies are nice. The weird thing is how incredibly angry people get when you attack the monarchy. I've been, I'm a satirist. It's my job to give the great gift of offence. But every time I do a cartoon about almost anything, I will get tons of hate email and death threats.
Yeah, I'll stop saying that.
But death threats by email don't count.
Yeah.
One of your children's ears sent you a home address, I will say. Yeah. But I did one recently about the birth of little Prince Louis. Louis? Is it Louis?
Yeah.
And it actually had nothing to do, but it was Theresa May and Amber Rudd and a work experience person from Capita and the media as the bad fairies waiting outside the delivery room. So they could be the bad fairies in the fairy tales. And it was just taking a knock at them and taking a knock particularly at the media, drooling over this and turning this into a big thing. It's just a kid being born. And of course, all these people say, this is a new low for the Guardian attacking a harmless, helpless baby in arms. And it's...
But it wasn't the baby you were attacking.
It wasn't the baby I was attacking.
Yeah.
But it's the assumption you can't say anything even remotely, which is disrespectful. Why should I have respect for... I mean, the Queen... I met the Queen last year. Soft gloves. I met her in my... You don't know about this, my weird role. I'm a vice president of the Zoological Society of London. We were opening an elephant house at Whipsnade. The Queen was there to open it. And she came along and shook hands, and I said hello, and she said nothing.
And she's so small, so it looked as if you were bowing.
Yeah, exactly. I said nothing except hello.
There we are, very eloquent.
And then Prince Philip came along and said, you look bloody freezing! And we said, yes, we are. Because we were.
There we are,
and then
right.
She fed two bananas to an elephant called Elizabeth, which is fine.
Right.
But I didn't feel transformed. I mean, I know people who were just, oh, I've just seen the Queen. You know, these poor sods who queue up outside the Westminster Hospital for Officers waiting for a new baby to be born. Right, they're just there all the time. Think, what do you actually get out of this? Then again, what do I know? I don't understand Gilbert and Sullivan or Crown bowling, you know, so...
I'd like them all to turn around and just say it was a big joke. That's why they went there. Oh, you've just rubbed out.
I just rubbed out Harry's nose. Harry's nose. I haven't got quite Harry right.
All right. What was wrong with his nose?
I hadn't made it quite big enough.
Oh, right.
Because the thing about Harry, we will say nothing more than the fact he doesn't actually fit the template of the Windsors.
Right, no, anyway.
Because I know how to draw a Windsor, because I know what they look like, but he doesn't look like them.
Yeah, anyway, but
genetics is a funny old business.
It is, it could have just been the throw of the dice, really.
Tombo, that old genetic tombo.
Could all come up and you look like somebody else. But there we are, we won't really go into that too much. So... She didn't actually woo you then, really, when you met her, did you, at the old Queenie?
No, I have to say, I was very impressed when I met Prince Philip once at a gala fundraising dinner for the Cartoon Museum, of which I'm a trustee. And this was about 20 years ago.
It's a Republican, you seem to hang out with this a bit.
You can't help it, because there are all these organisations, because their patronage... imbues these charities with some kind of strange fairy tale glamour, so you have to turn up. Because I support the charity, and therefore I support everything they do. And it was a fundraiser for the Cartoon Museum, and there were three cartoonists, living cartoonists in the rooms at St. James's Palace. And it was me, Peter Brooks of The Times, and Nick Garland of The Telegraph.
Yep.
And Nick Garland is far too grand to meet royalty, so...
Royally meets Nick Garland.
Exactly. So Brooks and I were summoned into the ducal presence, and I said hello. And he said, "So, do you have your work syndicated?" So I absolutely no idea. So, and he then turned to Peter Brooks, who bowed low, put his hand.
Oh no!
And said, "Peter Brooks, sir, The Times." At which point, Phil the Creek said, "The Times." Bloody self-righteous Murdoch rag! Wouldn't have it in the bloody house! And I said, well, no, terribly sorry, but the Guardians are self-righteous. Not as bad as the bloody Times! And tells me his heel stalked away, leaving Brooks with his hand in mid-air, looking slightly flustered. And my admiration for him went up exponentially at that point. Because it's like, you know, fights where you want both sides to lose. Murdoch against the Windsors. I think I backed the Windsors. Ooh, yeah. At least I know how to ride horses.
Come both lose.
Exactly.
Oh. But you do seem to hang out rather a lot with him. I'm now getting a bit worried.
Well, I'm still a Republican. If we have to have a head of state at all, why do we need to have a head of state? Why do we need to have a state?
You might need a meet and greeter, but the Speaker of the Commons could do it. You could have a lottery.
Well, I rather feel it should be a lottery. It should be on a rotating basis that
So Mrs. Miggins from Manchester.
Should come and do it.
Mr. Barry from Bradford next.
Yeah, and then the Duke of Athlone, if he comes up in the lottery, that's fine. And and on it goes. And I think that'll be fine. All you need to do is to greet President Erdogan or President Trump.
Okay.
And nobody should have to do that more than once.
No, that's true.
And in a way, I remember Diana's funeral, which is a sort of truly weird event, again a kind of displaced empathising about things, and it took me quite a while to realise why so many people were so upset, and it was because they actually wanted to feel magnificently sad, and a good funeral makes people feel magnificently sad, and you feel empowered by it because it's because of the rawness of the emotion, and for the previous 15 years we'd been told that the highest sum of human achievement was going shopping. That was it. Yeah. Just go shopping. You'll be fine. Just go shopping. Yeah. And they wanted more than that. Yeah. But watching the funeral and looking at Prince William and Prince Harry, these two little kids with their dead mum in front of them in this gun carriage, so I was thinking, actually, social services should swoop in and rescue them so they don't spend the rest of their lives in tweed.
Yeah.
And it is a kind of cruelty.
Yeah, I mean, it's a sign of an incredibly dysfunctional family.
Yeah.
The way they performed that. Now, look at that, you've now got a little paintbrush.
It's a pen. There we are. We're going to do some inking now. And then I'm not going to do this in full colour because we haven't got time, but we're going to do a bit of inking and then we're going to we'll have a reveal, but carry on talking.
I want you to talk. I was going to ask you questions. But you travel a lot abroad, Martin. You know, you go to cartoon conventions, you go and you support cartoonists in areas of the world where they're under pretty bit of pressure. Rulers tend not to like them. Do the Royals ever come up? Do they ever ask about them? Or
well, they come up. They come up in different ways. I was in Beirut recently for an Arab cartoon competition. Absolutely brilliant stuff. You sort of think, oh, yes, Arabs and cartoons, they're just going to kill all the cartoons. Not a bit of it. They've got, you know, visual satire is a universal phenomenon. Everybody has it. Usually they're attacking not their own governments, but they have it. We all know what human beings do. And there's a Jordanian cartoonist there who was the first person to draw the King of Jordan, you know, about 15 years ago.
Is that allowed?
Well, it is now. And he felt really worried at the time, but he then met the King of Jordan and said, oh, I really like that. But it was when The Guardian first started putting my stuff and Steve Bell's stuff on the internet, on their website, which took off after 9/11 because the American liberal media completely collapsed in the face of the Bush administration and the Patriot
Act. Yeah, the onslaught.
And so all these people were reading The Guardian, and in the nature of the vile interweb, which I think we should close down. We'd miss the cat GIFs for about 3 weeks, but otherwise we'd be a lot better off. But
I'm going to use it to show this cartoon.
That's true. But started getting all these emails, these furious emails, because American cartoon is very different from British cartoon. It's a different tradition. We look back at Gilray and Hogarth and this really vicious stuff that's been going on for three centuries. And of course, Steve Bell would always draw George Bush as a chimpanzee, because he looked like a chimpanzee. Yeah. And he sort of made a noise like a chimpanzee. He walked like a chimpanzee.
Chimpanzees could sue, I think, for defamation.
Yeah. And they said, how dare you draw our head of state, our commander-in-chief of the chimpanzee? You wouldn't do cartoons like this about your monarchy. And I said, well, I don't draw him as a chimpanzee. By the way, here's 300 years worth of cartoons. Because there's a wonderful story about the French ambassador at the court of St. James in 1785, so that's 4 years before the French Revolution, sending a dispatch to Versailles saying, look, they are going to have another revolution like they did 150 years ago. They're going to chop off the king's head. It'll be just like it was then.
Bit drastic.
Because you just walk down any street in London and all these little kiosks selling these satirical prints of the royal family in the most disgusting and depraved situations imaginable. And Gilray famously was doing the Prince Regent as this voluptuary at his breakfast, having all these cures for syphilis around him and just being this fat old bastard. And we were just doing it all the time. And of course, the French ambassador was completely wrong, because we were laughing at the monarchy and portraying them in this humiliating way. In France, if you did that, you would be immediately knocked up in the Bastille.
So they bottled it up.
And they bottled it up. Yeah. They had these sex libels about Marie Antoinette, but none of them were funny. It wasn't satire. Yeah. It wasn't about the sort of pressure valve of laughter. Mm. And of course, 4 years later, there was blood running in the streets of Paris because they bottled it up. And in a way, although I'm a Republican, if we do have to have a royal family, their one function is for us to gossip about and laugh at.
Lack of respect.
Lack of respect. And they would like us to have, you know, everybody would like to be able to pull the Les Majestés thing, you know, which we've now democratised. So everybody's always offended all the time because anybody says anything about anybody. But you know that given the fact that until comparatively recently, if you were rude about a king, you would probably be torn to pieces by wild horses. But, you know, train spotters would like that to happen as well. I mean, everybody would like to be protected against the terrible, terrible danger of being mildly upset.
But the more we mock them, if it spreads and you have a repeat of, I don't know, Royal, it's a knockout when Fergie got all those bit of royals to dress up in the outfit. Can they survive mockery in the end if it becomes absolutely widespread? You do it, I do it, because we're Republicans. But if everybody did it, would they?
I think it's can we survive? Well, can they survive the cringing embarrassment of the reign of King Charles III? Because Charles, you know, he is somebody who is he's the man in the golden mask. That he's trapped in this role. His sole function in life is to wait for his mother to die. which is pretty horrific. He's pushing 70, unless he's 70 already.
Yeah, everyone else wants their parents to be immortal and go on forever, and he's waiting. Yeah,
and you know, he clearly sort of hates it in many ways. He's in the public eye, which he hates. It would be a kindness. It would be a kindness to say, you don't have to do this, because you'll say, oh, well, you know, one is so pleased to have appointed this chrysanthemum to the Privy Council, you know. But I think we should pull down St. Paul's Cathedral because it's not thatched. And you just think, oh, God, it'll be just so excruciating. Nah. And they've sort of got away just out of the general kindness and politeness of the great British people, of forgiving him for having basically tied Diana Spencer to a rock as a kind of sacrifice to be eaten by the Dragon of Windsor, and off nobbing Camilla. They sort of, okay, well, at least he might be happy now. But the idea of him going around just pontificating, if he's a pontiff, no, he's not sort of kingifying, I think will just be so mortifyingly embarrassed. It's like seeing Theresa May. Theresa May will finally go through embarrassment. Not for anything else, it'll just be too embarrassing for her to still be there. People will just be cringing by the thought of it. And I think they'll just be cringing at the thought of King Charles.
Now I'm looking forward to it as a Republican. Yeah. Emma Dent Coward, the MP for Kensington Palace, as well as Grenfell Tower. There's a borough in London with huge inequality. She thinks he'll be fantastic for the Republican movement. For the reasons you make out, he's just an embarrassment. But if he's such an embarrassment, can we break the spell? Are you 60 now? Are you in age?
I am nearly 60.
Nearly 60. Can you see in your life, hopefully, long to go, Martin?
People say, what's going to happen? What's going to happen in the next general election? What's going to happen in the local elections? You know, I always say, well, it's very likely that a huge space gecko called Colin's going to come along and eat the world.
Right,
We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know how things, you know, change on a sixpence. The idea that you have to afford the monarchy endless deference, and I think it's because they're so unimportant that we're expected to do that. Just like, you know, the gaudiest journalism is about fashion, which is fundamentally unimportant. But if you think about the history of the monarchy, you think about all the monarchies that have been overthrown, all the monarchs that have been murdered. Well, we started off that. The fact that Leopold of the Belgians, the man who committed atrocity after atrocity in the Congo, which was his personal... His funeral cortege in Brussels in 1910 was booed by 100,000 people. That's how much they love the monarchy.
I love that.
And who knows what's going to be. You know, I think people have a kind of respect for the Queen because we know nothing about her. And she's just got on with the job. She's been pretty quiet. She's been dutiful. I mean, she's been incredibly dutiful. You can't fault her for that. Mm. She's also acquired a huge amount of money.
Wonderfully rich. Now, I think we should have a pause now, Mom, while you finish your cartoon, because I'm actually distracting you.
I think you whistle God Save the Queen for a bit.
And then we'll be back.
Yeah.
Well, that was my whistling. Here we are now. You've finished your royal cartoon for Not the Royal Wedding.
Yep.
And the reveal is, Martin?
Well, the reveal is here, the happy couple, Harry and Meghan, who are walking into Slough Register office. No TV crews, no world media, no crowds of tidy children waving flags. But you need a witness for a wedding, and so they've dragged a homeless person off the street who's got a bottle of meths in a bag, to celebrate. This is obviously one of the homeless people that the leader of Slough and Windsor Council wanted to clear off the streets.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, as
it's not Prince Charles on Hard Times.
Not yet. No. I think he'd have somebody to do this Hard Times for him, don't you?
See, now, I'd like them if they went off and had a private, personal wedding rather than try to turn it into some great state event where we're all supposed to be, you know, bowing, scraping, curtsying, forelock, tugging, pretending they somehow represent us when they do not.
Well, they don't represent us, and I don't believe in bowing and scraping to anybody. You know, that's why I'm a satirist. That's probably some psychological...
You're incapable
flaw,
of it.
Yeah, flaw in me. But why do we need you know, we have this celebrity culture, but the point of the celebrity culture is we build them up so we can knock them down, so it just makes us feel... makes us feel good, because we don't have gladiators anymore. We don't have sort of, you know, lions tearing people to pieces in public. But the royal family, we do it in the same way, but we are expected to give so much more. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I've got nothing against them as people. I don't think I'd probably want to spend a night in a pub with many of them. Possibly Prince Philip, he might be a bit of a laugh, but you know, Prince Edward, I think, would be a bit of a washout, you know, going through the sherbets. But why are we expected to be so pitifully grateful? And that's the thing, you know, the Evening Standard, when Sarah Sands was editing it, you knew that this was
now at the Today programme
seeping away from being anything remotely approaching serious journalism, because every bloody day, the front page, there would be either a picture of Kate Middleton or a picture of Mrs. Cameron. I can't remember what her name was now.
Samantha
Cameron. Mm. You know, getting amazingly discovered by some paparazzi unpacking a flat pack unit in the car park at IKEA.
Looking normal.
Yeah, looking normal. And you just think, why am I expected to be grateful for this image of this person? Mm. I just don't understand what it is. What kind of weird psychological iconography? Is this sort of semi-religious? What is it all about? Because... you know, these people are no better than you or I or anybody who is listening to us at the moment. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the mantra of a satirist is the same as that wonderful old Jewish joke when people think they're better than you. You know, the old Jewish mother says, you know, they think they're better than you, but they shit and they're going to die.
And
it applies to all of us.
That's very true. That's lovely. And it's also the inequality in Britain when you have the hereditary family sitting at the top of the tree. And then you have the homeless person. I'd much rather the money spent on that wedding, and it's a huge cost to the public purse, because we know they won't be paying for the security and everything.
Yeah.
If it was better, it would be better spent helping homeless people off the streets into accommodation and building houses.
Exactly, and that would be a proper legacy.
Martin, that's brilliant. Thank you very much. And we will put this cartoon on the Mirror website. You'll be able to find it next to the Not the Royal Wedding podcast. Martin, been a pleasure watching you at work and listening to you.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you. And now on Not the Royal Wedding, we're joined by Tiff Stevenson, a comedian from Mock the Week. Got your own show, Bombshell, which you have a Republican bit, don't you, Tiff?
Well, yeah, I've got lots of stuff about the current political state, and I also have some stuff about the royal wedding I'm talking about, which will be very out of date, like as of next week, I think.
Well, I don't know, there might be another one along soon, the way things are going.
Yeah, yeah, just every 5 minutes, why not? Distraction. No, I didn't say that. The show's quite political, and also a lot of it is about sort of the interactions between men and women, which has become so relevant in the light of Me Too and everything else happening. But I sort of wrote this show like a year and a bit ago, you know, to take up to Edinburgh, and had this whole section about, you know, the difference between compliments and harassment. So it turns out that it's just, as time has gone on, it's just become increasingly more relevant. Also, it's a bit about a person who, you know, has always considered themselves left-wing, beginning to, like, kind of find myself separating or away from parts of the left and that movement, and feeling politically adrift.
Right. All right, are you ready for the 10 quick fire?
Sure, yes.
Not the royal wedding questions.
Are they quick fire, are they? All right. Okay, all right.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Have you ever met a royal?
No, I've been to a party that Princess Beatrice was at.
That's almost.
Yeah,
that's
so quite. Almost. I was in a room with her, but there wasn't an official introduction. I certainly didn't get knighted in the way that Ed Sheeran did.
If you bumped into the Queen, what would you say to her?
I would ask her if she has mugs with pictures of normal people on them.
Oh, dear.
You know, just like people on their holidays and stuff. I imagine that she has, like, a mug with someone in the Canaries and a commemorative plate of someone on a stag do or something. That would be...
She'd be certainly served by ordinary people who are be told to know their place. Have you ever sung God Save the Queen?
I have, yeah. I've sung it at school. I think we've had it at school or like at the races, maybe. When they have the brass band and they do a bit of an pa kind of, they'll do Cockney songs and God Save the Queen. So I have, before probably realising what it meant, although as I sort of got older, there's a club in central London that's like an actors club called The Phoenix, who used to be run by a very famous camp man called Maurice, and he would make everyone stand for the national anthem, and people wouldn't get up, and he'd get very, very angry. He was a big royalist.
Blimey.
How dare you, not in my pub. You will stand. You will stand, for God's sake, the Queen.
You drink in some odd places. Buckingham Palace, would you turn it into a hotel or flats?
I'd put some, maybe some displaced people from Grenfell in there.
Flats. We'll go for flats.
It's
we'll
the short answer, yes.
And if you're hungry and you're only given two choices, would you have a swan sandwich or a Dutchie original biscuit?
Oh, I don't know. Swan sandwich sounds a bit... it's gamey, I imagine.
Yeah, I imagine.
I would probably feel quite sad about the idea of eating a swan, so I'm going to say a Dutchie.
Original.
Is it a Dutchie or a douchey?
Well, I think it depends how posh you are. I think he sells them for a fortune, doesn't he, Prince Charles? And what's the best thing we could say about Prince Charles?
He is a man of a certain age.
Cool. He really is, isn't he? If you want grumpy, you've got grumpy. And some Tory MPs want to buy that family a new royal yacht. What would you spend a spare £100 million on?
Oh, I mean, there's so many things we could do with that. We could probably get some of the plastic out of the ocean.
Yeah.
Says the person drinking out of a plastic cup.
Well, I mean, there's always, you know.
I mean, there's so much. There's so much regeneration that could be done to areas that need it. Money could be put into, you know, education for kids. I just don't think we need yachts. And I'm seeing some go around on the Thames just now. Look, there's one going past. Into anything positive or a new wardrobe for me.
Right, we'll go for plastic, I think. Anyway, is Meghan Markle a good catch for a very fusty, traditional institution?
I think so. Mm. I think, you know, bringing kind of an American into the royal family, also that is an incredibly white royal family.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of talk about Meghan Markle being... I was in America, and so a lot of American women's believe she's sort of living the dream. You know, that, oh my God, Meghan Markle is living the dream. You know, that certain type of American woman talks like their voice is running out of batteries. That type of woman. You know, because they see that she's gone from game show hostess to actual princess. Whereas I think she's gone from successful actress with autonomy to public servant with racist in-laws. Just a slightly different perspective on it. So
a bit more, really, from living the dream to living the nightmare. Once
yeah,
she's in the outlaw,
I think that's how you know it's true love, though. Yeah. I think it's quite a task to be part of the royal family. So I think that's a genuine relationship that they have, a genuine love that they have. But I think it's an uphill climb, but I think it's what the royal family needs. I think people really love the young royals much more than they do the older generations. People are a bit more behind it, but I still think the idea of a royal family itself is inherently mad.
She's about to find out.
Yes, yeah.
And what will you be doing on Saturday the 19th of May when the traffic chaos in Windsor caused by you know, the royals blocking the roads?
What will I be doing? I will be, my mum will no doubt be watching it because she'll be interested. I'll be planning my own wedding.
Oh, congratulations.
I got engaged at Christmas. So,
who's the lucky prince?
The lucky prince is a man called Paul Bertolotti.
Oh.
And I had to say yes because he wrapped my ring up, so I wouldn't have got a present otherwise. So here we are.
Are you getting £23 million of public money to...
No, I feel like I deserve some of that money, yeah.
Well, you're paying for it, you know, get some back.
Yeah, well, I think that's why Meghan Markle's dad maybe sold those paparazzi pictures. Maybe he didn't realise how it worked here. He thought he had to pay for the wedding. He's like, I'll get some money somehow. Didn't realise we're paying for it. We're all father of the bride, aren't we? So we should we should probably make the most of that and get ourselves along. But I will be in the midst of planning my own wedding, which is... That's the worst thing about getting engaged is immediately everyone kind of wants to know when you're going to get married.
Yeah, it normally follows. So I
it does
understand
follow,
how that happens,
yeah, but yeah. It's pressure. It's just
it
pressure.
It is pressure. You're quite right, it's pressure. And who would you like to see as the first democratically head of state in a great British republic?
Oh, I think all the people that I would have liked... Oh, I don't know, maybe Margaret Atwood.
Oh, left field.
Yeah. Yeah, I was going to say, like, all the people that I love, all the, like, kind of women like Maya Angelou or people like that, you know, she's no longer with us. So, yeah, I feel like anyone that... Who would you have?
anyone, but no, I'd have J.K. Rowling.
J.K. Rowling,
yeah, Harry Potter, fantastic.
There we go. If we can have a Brit involved, let's say J.K. Rowling, I'd agree with that. And also, she's massively boosted the economy with the books.
Yeah.
So she's probably responsible for a huge amount of the wealth that's kicking around.
If the Queen Studden was elected, good luck to her.
Yeah, I don't think she'd get voted in.
Probably not, but probably a bit old. But there we are. It doesn't really matter, does it? Isn't it all about democracy and representation? And
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Truly having a democracy. I mean, because we mock the Americans, don't we? We mock the Americans about Trump, and then you realise that we actually we have a sovereign.
Yeah. I might be a Republican. I think they do a little less harm than Trump, but nevertheless, I like to get him out.
Maybe the same amount of hair dye. Who knows?
That's great. I think you've just lost your damehood, and we'll hopefully be able to keep you out of the Tower of London.
Oh, brilliant. Excellent. Cool.
Steph, thank you very much for joining us on Not the Royal Wedding.
Thank you.
And we're joined now by Graham Smith, who is CEO of Republic, the campaigning group. We've used a lot of your facts in previous editions of this Republican podcast, Graham, so it's lovely to speak to you in person.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Does the monarchy exist on a series of myths and create its own fantasy around royalty in order to survive?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, people don't really care about the constitutional design of this country that much. And, you know, it's not about, you know, it's a great piece of constitutional design. It is basically a passive acceptance of the monarchy built on three core misunderstandings, which is that it's benign, it's non-political, doesn't really get involved or cause any harm, number one. Number two is they think everybody else loves it, this idea that it unites the country. And there's a slightly sort of, I wouldn't say sinister, I suppose, but slightly sort of underhand part of that myth, which is sort of everybody else likes to say, be quiet, you know. Don't upset the crowd. And the third one, which is probably the strongest one, is that if you're thinking that everyone else likes it and it's harmless, you're also told that it's really good for the economy. So why would you get rid of something which is making us a bit of money on the side and not doing any harm and just a bit of fun for people? So none of that's true. But you know, you can imagine that if anybody just thinks that casually, hasn't really looked at it very carefully and doesn't care that much, then you know, you would forgive them for telling pollsters that they're happy to keep the monarchy.
And let's pick them in reverse order, as it were. Yeah. Good for the economy. We're always told they cost a matter of pence per year, head. That's a bit of a fiddled figure, isn't it?
Well, it's a fairly dodgy figure. I mean, it's a sort of spin that would make Alistair Campbell blush. I mean, you know, it's the only institution that I know of that tries to get away with that, that sort of dividing their total cost by every man, woman and child in the country, which is what they've essentially done. The total cost they're dividing is about 40 million, which is a fraction of the total cost. And obviously not everybody's paying tax. You just don't do that with
spending. Of course.
That's not how it works. You know, you say, well, what do you need? How much is it actually going to cost? Is it value for money? And you know, it's a good use of public money. We've calculated the cost is something in the region of £345 million to the taxpayer.
How do you get to that figure?
So we're obviously taking the official figure. We're adding to that estimates, informed estimates in the press about security, which is around 100 million.
Yeah.
We count the revenue of the Duchies of Lancaster and Duchy of Cornwall because they are essentially state assets which have been handed over to the royals. There's lots of costs to local councils. If you ever have a royal come into your area to open something or cut a ribbon, do a freedom of information request to the council and ask them how much it costs, because quite often it's tens of thousands, if not a couple of hundred thousand pounds for a quick visit. This is a rough estimate, but it's probably a conservative estimate. And really, we shouldn't be having to work this out. It should be in black and white, printed every year, everybody clear about what it costs.
Yeah, I'm all for community support, but they must be the most subsidised family in Britain.
Yeah, incredibly subsidised. And the thing is, a lot of this cost is on private stuff. It's private travel, you know.
Using planes, holidays, trains.
And helicopters half the time to Gloucester to Ascot, for example. They'll take a helicopter. you know, a few years ago, was it getting on for 10 years ago now, a lot of MPs got into trouble for spending public money on themselves. Some went to prison, some lost their seats. Prince Charles does it, and everyone just, you know, makes excuses and doesn't bat an eyelid. So, I mean, I don't see how that is any different on a basic moral level. But on the value for money, obviously, the people are saying, well, you know, it's costing us X amount, but obviously there's a ton of money coming back in, and that just doesn't stack up. No one's ever shown me any evidence that this is the case. It's all, you know, supposition and guesswork. And the famous intangible benefits, you know, which is, if you start saying something's intangible, it means you can't prove it. You know, that's basically what they're saying.
Yeah, well, we know what happened in France. There's no shortage of visits to Versailles.
Yeah, but also even in London. I mean, Tower of London is far, far more popular and profitable than Buckingham Palace. And as far as I know, they don't go to the Treasury asking for money to do up the buildings, whereas Buckingham Palace has been badly managed for the whole of the Queen's reign and left to fall apart. So they're now demanding, what was it, £80 million? Or more than that, actually.
That's £369 million to do a book house.
So going up to £80 million a year for the grant to do it up. But still they refuse to back down to MPs' requests to open up the palace all year round. So, yeah, it doesn't stack up.
And the second myth you mentioned, that they're really popular. This is... I mean, there are some people who will turn up and wave flags.
Yeah.
Other people, you and I, are very much are Republicans, a Democratic argument. And in the middle, people are kind of accepting, but it's only because they never really look at it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, the way it's kind of articulated is often, you know, it unites the country, and we're told that this wedding is going to be a national celebration, and it just doesn't...
There's a shrug of indifference to these weddings.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a poll out just before, a week out before the 2011 wedding, saying, you know, I think 70% aren't interested. Same again this year. The YouGov poll that we've just commissioned, 60% not interested, 70% doing something else that day, whether it's working or just having a normal day. We actually asked people, do you think that the royals should pay for the wedding, including security and policing? And I think it was somewhere over 70% said yes. We then said, if you had a choice that your taxes could contribute to the wedding or not contribute, over 70% said not contribute. So this is not a nation of royalists. You know,
no.
They would be very happy to contribute and to celebrate and be part of it, and people just aren't. And I'd say, you know, we talk about the Westminster bubble all the time, but there is a royal bubble. Where people just look inwards all the time at the people that are turning up, the people that are celebrating, and the family themselves. And on days like Saturday, you know, go to the beaches, go to the shopping centres, go to the big tourist destinations around the country. That's where everyone's going to be.
There'll be a bigger crowd if it's a nice day on Brighton Beach, I'm sure, than in Windsor. But you put barriers down a pavement and you limit it, you're going to get a crowd. There's a spectacle.
I mean, people turn up to things. I mean, and we're a big country, there's lots of people. I mean, it's not difficult to get a million people to London as we had in 2012. But, I mean, I don't remember the Diana Charles wedding, but I was also seven or something. And my parents said that, you know, they took us to the beach in Dawlish that day, and it's absolutely heaving. So this isn't new. You know, it's just obviously in 1981, there wasn't social media, there wasn't the same engagement or willingness to sort of point these things out, but you know, it's always been the case that most people just, you know, move on and you know, they might pay some fleeting attention to it, but yeah, not a lot.
Yeah, back in 1981, I escaped to the Peak District in Derbyshire. A lot of other people did too, I noticed, and we all got sunburned as a result. And this idea of being benign, there is a question of legitimising inequality and hereditary power, but I suppose Prince Charles with his black spider letters lobbying for the causes he loves, including fox hunting. and yet, we don't get to see those, do they? They're still protected.
Well, there's a whole load of aspects to why it's not benign. I mean, you know, some people say, I've had MPs and politicians and whatever who would otherwise support it, but they just think, oh, you know, it's not relevant. What's it matter? You know, I've got more important things to worry about. But
so I understand that.
You know, the institution itself, I've you know, I'm on record as saying it's corrupt. As you said, that, you know, Prince Charles is misusing or abusing his position, in my view, to push his own political agenda. It also gives us a head of state who is not independent. People like to think that she is, but she's only there to do what the Prime Minister tells her to do. You know, in constitutionally, she may as well not turn up to work, because, I mean, the Prime Minister will make all the decisions. And over the last few years, we've had a number of moments when there have been hung parliaments, and particularly when both Tory and Labour leadership were in crisis after the referendum, when there would have been an opportunity there for a head of state to actually be effective and say something and show some kind of national leadership. And the Queen just didn't want to know. She was like, well, I can't get involved in that. Any controversy around me jeopardises the institution, and that's what comes first. So there's a lost opportunity in terms of having an effective constitutional independent head of state. And we have a monarchy or a royal household that misuses public money and which uses their secretive and unique access to ministers to lobby, A, for their own interests, and B, for their own agenda, as we see with Charles. And I'm certain that Charles isn't the only one doing that as well.
So, really, if you're the establishment, you're the elite, you're the people with power and wealth in Britain, a monarchy is quite a good cloak of security for you.
Yeah, I mean, our constitution is pretty rotten, and what it does is, I think there's two malign aspects to it. Firstly, the Crown concentrates an awful lot of power in the hands of the government.
Yeah.
Now, that's not entirely obvious at the moment, because the government's very weak and shambolic, but usually, if it's got a decent majority, there's not a lot that the Prime Minister can't get away with an acquiescent backbench, and quite often without even bothering the Parliament at all, using Privy Council or, you know, whatever prerogative powers they've got at their disposal. But I do think it also then creates this elite, pompous, you know, culture around Westminster and around power and around institutions where, yeah, you know, get invited to garden parties and get given gongs and awards and, you know, and I think that's really harmful to our sense of being a democratic nation. I think that's appalling. And I think that we ought to have a system where everybody is looking everyone in the eye, calling everyone by their name and not bowing, not curtsying, no majesties and highnesses, just, you know, from head of state down to the you know, the cleaner in the street, we're just all the same.
And you're a citizen, not a subject.
Yeah, and I would say, I mean, you know, the model that we're talking about having is not a US model or a French model. We're talking about having what we have now, parliamentary system, prime minister, independent head of state, but all elected, all democratic. And the Irish system is the closest model. Now, there is a brilliant photo of Michael D. Higgins, the current Irish president, who's very, very popular. I mean, their presidents are as popular as our Queen. And there's a photo of him standing quietly, waiting patiently behind someone who's taking money out of a cash machine.
Yeah.
And yeah, this went viral. And, you know, Irish people around the world just loved him for it, because that is the sort of normal, humble, you know, he's president, everybody respects that, but he is also just one of the people representing the
Britain. Yeah,
that's the level we should be aiming for.
That's real dignity.
Yeah, absolutely. That's far more dignified than anything the monarchy tries to do. Because I think the monarchy is just grubby. I mean, it's very self-centred, very needy, you know, and just, I mean, you know, someone was saying, I can't remember who it was, in the Times, just interviewed Prince Harry. I thought, well, at what point did you ask him, you know, you're spending millions of pounds of taxpayers' money on your wedding, you know? Are you ever going to ask him that? But it's always fluffy stories about, you know, how much do you love your fiancé.
Yeah, you know, the groundwork for all those interviews is done in advance, and questions cleared, yeah, and areas, and if you stray out, you'll never be invited back.
Well, this is one of the appalling things, is that you came out with Channel 4 News a couple of years ago, that there's a contract for them to sign, you know, and that's an appalling admission. That, I mean, Channel 4 News said that it wouldn't sign it, but BBC refused to comment on the matter.
Now, which means they signed it.
Yeah, which means they signed it, and that's appalling. And to the point where they have editorial control, that if they had a programme that they wanted to get someone like me or you on as well, the royal household would be able to veto that contribution to the programme. So that's a pretty poor state of affairs for our head of state and her family. But I, you know, I spoke to a journalist from the BBC a few years ago and said, well, you know, if there's a scandal or a controversy, invite, don't just repeat what the press office has said, invite the prince on, or whoever it is, get them onto Today programme or Newsnight. And he said, well, everyone knows they don't do interviews. That's not how it works. Tell us you've invited them on and that they've declined.
I love the idea of a news release saying Prince Charles was approached for a comment but declined to appear.
And how many times after they say that, you know, six, seven times over six, seven different news stories, people start to go, well, yeah, it's a fair point. You know.
Yeah, it is a fair point.
We ask everybody else on, why not these people?
Yeah. Finally, Graham, working it out, if you were 7 in 1981 when Charles and Diana married, that must make you in your mid-40s.
Yeah, 44.
As Great Britain's chief Republican agitator, do you think you'll see a republic in your lifetime?
Yeah, I do. And I mean, when I started this job, quite a lot of people that I met in our memberships are, you know, I do support this, but it won't happen in my lifetime. I don't get that very often now. And I've always said, well, it has to be in someone's lifetime. Why not ours? You know, and these things don't happen over generations. They happen relatively quickly. And there's a whole load of things that have happened in my lifetime, which, you know, when I was born wouldn't have been guessed at. You know, the fall of the Berlin Wall, you know, first black American president, gay marriage, that even 15 years ago people would say that'd be years away, you know. Back in 2000, when the election was against, in the US, was Bush and Gore, if you said, you know, in 8 years' time or whatever, it's going to be a woman and a black man fighting as the lead serious candidates for the Democratic nomination, and then the black man's going to win it and then become president. People have said that's going to be 50 years away before we have that. So change happens relatively quickly, and you can never really predict when it's going to happen. So, yeah, I mean, it would be a mug's game to say it's going to definitely happen then or whenever. But I'd say this, there is... a lot of the support for the monarchy, a lot of that 75% is because of the Queen. We just haven't known anything different, and we've never witnessed a succession. We're going to witness the first succession in the era of social media and 24-hour news. Everyone wants their voice heard. We're going to have King Charles, who's controversial. We've got Republican movements around Europe, and we've got Australia, Canada, New Zealand all agitating as well. So this is going to change in the future.
Well, on that note of Republican optimism, Graham, I think we'll leave it there for this episode of Not the Royal Wedding, and thank you for listening.